Hello everyone and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news podcast. Here we'll be taking a critical look at a number of breaking news stories with a leadership and management theme up to the 24th of March 2020. My name's Nick Scott, an economist and academic working with the Institute, and joining me to analyse these stories is Kate Cooper, Head of Research, Policy and Standards at the Institute. Hello Kate.
Hello Nick.
Our first story reports on a one-poll survey of 2,000 employed women in the United States, which found that women get talked down to by male co-workers on average 6 times a week. These experiences of being spoken to like a child are labelled mansplaining and run on average to over 300 incidents per year per person, with 3 in 5 women thinking that men in their office don't even realise that they're explaining information that women already know. Kate, with 3/4 believing themselves underpaid compared to male counterparts, and over 60% planning on leaving their current job because there's no room to grow, what can leaders do to ensure women achieve their full potential in the workplace?
This is just another example, I think, of how differently men and women use conversation. And I've cited the work of Deborah Tannen before. If men think they need to solve problems for you, tell you something that you don't know, generally use conversation as a way of showing some sort of superiority. If we look at how many more men are in management roles than women, and the higher you go up the organisation, the more that is the case, it's not really surprising that that happens. But what one needs to really think about is the women can challenge and say, why are you explaining something to me I know already? Which makes for a bit of discomfort, and one can understand that reluctance. But also, anybody who's familiar with coaching approaches know you would never assume to tell somebody something. You check first whether their level of understanding was, and whether they wanted indeed an explanation. So there's an insensitivity going on, undoubtedly, on the part of these men who think it's their work to tell women things that they obviously don't know. And at the same time, I think women have to say, please don't tell me this. And the whole organisation has to say, how are we going to embed conversations that are based on coaching approaches rather than exchange or transmitting information?
The Verge website highlights a critical report about US telecoms giant Charter Communications, which has only recently updated its work from home policy, with numerous reports from employees saying the company required them to report to work in person despite the coronavirus pandemic. Employees had reported that while Charter has the means to allow staff to work from home, and many do informally, executives were reluctant to relax the formal attendance policy. Gizmodo, which also covered this story, asserts some employees believe the company is putting profit before safety. So Kate, what does this news item tell us about attitudes to flexible working?
I think so often when people take a view about flexible working, and the more senior you are in the organisation, the more that view affects policy and actually what people are allowed or not allowed to do, the more it tells you about the individual concerned. If you are able to work flexibly, if you don't need to be watched by other people, if you can manage your own time, if you can trust and be trusted, you don't have a problem with flexible working. It's almost like he's projecting his own anxieties about not being able to work unless he's in that work environment where there's a degree of monitoring and watching going on, and that it must be true for everybody else. And we so often hear about chief execs particularly finding that one thing works for them, which might be turning off email or having a 4-week break in the summer, whatever it is, and they decide that everybody should do the same. And what it's not doing, Nick, is recognising difference, that we work differently, we're motivated differently, we'll do our best work in different circumstances. And the best leaders and managers recognise that and create spaces where you can work to the best of your ability. Though I think with this one, I think events will have overtaken them and they'll have no choice about it. And it's going to be very interesting when we hopefully get to a position where people are able to return to offices, how different their attitude to that journey and to being in that place is going to be.
Well, in another COVID-related story, craft beer maker BrewDog announced that it's turning over part of its distillery business to the manufacture of hand sanitizer gel, which it plans to give away to those with the greatest need. Green King Group, the UK's largest brewer, has announced that it will start to deliver pub grub following the closure of its premises to walk-in customers. On a much larger scale, Vogue reports that fashion giant Inditex, owner of Zara, amongst others, has harnessed its buying power to purchase thousands of medical masks that it is distributing to areas of shortage in its native Spain. Additionally, they're investigating the possibility of switching some of the textile manufacturing over to the production of health materials, and in particular, focusing on obtaining medical-grade fabric for the manufacture of hospital gowns. So the question here, Kate, really is what sort of leadership skills and reflexes must come into play for firms to pivot and adapt with such speed in the face of such a large-scale emergency?
What's really been played out here with these firms that have been so agile and so responsive is how they're dealing with what can be explained using the Kubler-Ross grief curve, explaining how when we're faced with something that's big and impactful, we want to resist it. And it's how long you stay in that stage when you're trying to deny it's not really happening, or you're getting angry about the restrictions that are being imposed upon you, and you're getting really sad because things weren't like that before. Those companies are going through those at a great rate, quickly adjusting to a new state of normal, a new way of doing things. And they're the ones that are changing what they produce, changing how they deliver their products and services, because they're not wasting energy or time in those negative stages. Now, of course, we have to go through them. You can't go straight from catastrophe to acceptance. But I think recognizing that there will be those reactions and saying, right, what are we going to do to get everyone to that place of acceptance must be a priority.
Our final news item reflects on the growing perception gap between leaders and employees around the importance of organizational culture and how it reflects and impacts gender diversity. A recent Accenture report entitled Getting Equal 2020 notes over two-thirds of staff care increasingly about culture and believe it's vital to the success of their firms. However, while 68% of leaders feel they create empowering environments, which create a sense of belonging, only 36% of employees agree. Accenture notes that if this perception gap were halved, then the proportion of women who feel they have real influence would rise from 1 in 4 to 1 in 3. The annual retention rate of women would rise by 5%, and the proportion of women reaching leadership positions would rise by 20%. So, Kate, what sort of steps can leaders take to narrow this perception gap?
I find it interesting that it's called a perception gap, because in so much of the research that certainly we've undertaken at the Institute, if you ask managers and leaders what they think they're doing, they think they are being open, transparent in their decision making, adopting coaching styles, open to challenge. If you ask the people that are managed and led, you will get quite a different picture. So we know that there is a strong bias to think that individually we are above average and we're better than the many people around us. And this is what's being played out here. I think calling it a perception gap is almost sanitising it in a way. It's that actually people have got a view of themselves as to how they behave, certainly with regard to women in organisation. And that's what's not being challenged. That actually, if that were so, if women were encouraged, I think going back to the previous piece about mansplaining. The cultures of organisations are such that men and women use conversation very differently. They have different, as our research showed, new decade, new direction, have quite different expectations of what work does, certainly with regards to what makes them stay and what make them want to leave and look for other jobs. And it's those deeper, more difficult conversations, I suppose, I mean, that you have to have in order to find what's really going on.
Well, thanks very much for that, Kate. That concludes this week's podcast. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com. Do please subscribe to this podcast series via iTunes or Spotify for more topical on message debate.